Enter if you dare this ghastly conversation of teens fraught with despair and recent lacerations. Final girl, chase after her, don't let her get away. But first, the Slumber Podcast Massacre.
Welcome to Slumber Podcast Massacre with TNA. That's Tim.
That's Andy.
And this is a podcast about horror. Every week, Tim and I get together. We talk about a different movie from the horror genre, from your well-known classic down to that rare gem that's not afraid to disintegrate a kid at the back of your video store shelf. This week, we continue our 10,000-year-long series, Evil Dice Tonight. That was only 20 movies. We're like barely halfway over.
Evil Dice this year.
Sometime in the calendar year. And wouldn't you believe it, random chance last week picked for us the 1988 sci-fi remake, The Blob. Tim, what's something that you overconsume?
Oh, okay. Good question is I just sort of like have an inner monologue with myself right now wondering about how much I want to disclose, but it's never stopped me before. I've gone through phases. I've gone through times where I drank far too much coffee. You yourself have worked in the coffee industry.
Yo.
And when it's right there in front of you, it's like a natural tendency to just keep drinking it and drinking it. And then you go home and you have like a legit caffeine crash and it sucks. Or I've actually been to a coffee shop that you might be familiar with. And it's just in one sitting because it tastes so good. Drinking too much and then walking back out into the parking lot, like, what did I do to myself? Yeah. Like, it's like an anxious, like, gross, tingly feeling. And I'm like, God, just let it stop. Like, but it just tastes so good.
Yeah.
One thing that I used to take in a lot of or consume was salt. And that is something that I cannot do anymore. And if you would think like quitting sugar is hard, quitting salt is next to impossible.
Yeah.
Because that's what makes food taste good.
Right.
Yeah. Most of what you think tastes good and that you've been lied to in the matrix of your whole life is just salt.
Yeah.
And so
I learned that in Boston. That was the food I ate was very bland there. And I was like, oh, they don't season it. In the kitchen, they leave it up to me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, no,
pasta, like bland pasta.
Yeah, it is. Whoa. Yeah.
Inedible.
Well, you know,
I was going to say uneatable.
Yeah.
It's Sunday morning.
A little bit of both, yeah. Well, let's get that out of the way. This was a weekend, for those of you who are familiar with it regionally, was our annual Popcorn Fest in town. Which is a lot more about beer than it is popcorn. And I also had my 30-year high school reunion, which took place over a couple of nights. It's been a lot of socializing. Let's put it that way. But let me ask you this. And I suppose your question could be open-ended, but are we talking about necessarily like ingestion?
No.
Yeah. So one of the more recent things is the time warp that you can slip into watching reels. And
wow.
And I know
for our younger viewers, that's a Instagram version of TikTok.
Right. And I actually one time even said to my one daughter, like, it was actually like I was showing her a video, but it was like of like a storm or something. So I'm like, honey, check out this footage. And she's like, footage, like the most antiquated thing you could call it. But that's a really weird thing to experience when you've been watching them and you're kind of just going on to the next one and then you end up like, okay, I'm done here. And then you go back to the first one that you started on.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, fuck, that one from like yesterday? So that's an eye opener. But meat is a thing that I love, yeah. And I eat a shit ton of it. And it's like, all you have to do is just read the right findings. Don't read all of the medical findings, just the ones that suit what you want to do with your life.
Yeah.
Because there's plenty of them out there that, like, even that carnivore diet where that's literally all you eat. And I'm like, well, then it's not that bad.
Right. Yeah. There's no carbs.
Yeah. Say that to my blood pressure medication.
No vegetables either. Which is...
Right. But no, I don't do as much as I used to do. Like, I don't eat a lot of candy. The one thing I really have to watch out for is pop, like cola.
Yeah.
Like, I love Coke. I think the fact that there was ever a quote unquote cola war between Pepsi and Coke is fucking ridiculous.
Yeah.
In hindsight, not that I won't drink a Pepsi if somebody hands me one.
Yeah.
But is there really a comparison there?
I prefer Pepsi.
What?
Yeah.
Are you over Coke?
Sure.
Really?
What the fuck? Well, it's fucking sugar water.
Coke has got the bite, though. It's got that, like, peppery bite.
All right.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. And that's something that
I'd rather have Dr. Pepper over either of them anyway.
You know what? They are the ones that really solved the diet thing. Like,
Dr. Pepper.
Yes.
So good.
Yeah. You're like, you mean Dr. Pepper? Because it tastes just fucking great. So, yeah, I really have to watch that. I used to like, this is one that wasn't necessarily ingestion, but when I was in high school, I was really concerned about my complexion, as most high schoolers are.
Yeah.
And so I would use Oxy 10, but I'd cover my entire face in it. Like, I'd plaster my face at night. And my dad would be like, you realize what you're doing is you're drying out your entire face, making it produce more oil. Right. And I'm like, yeah, but I'm just like, you know, smearing it on like, I don't care. I don't hear what you're saying.
Am I preemptively getting those new ones that are forming?
Yes, right.
There you go.
Exactly. And the thing is, I will say this. I am kind of a sucker for supplements. Like, I do, the amount of supplements that I take is a lot.
Okay.
But, you know, they make it sound real good for you. Like, you got it. Like, how can you not be taking fish oil? Do. So I take fish oil, I take CoQ10, I take vitamin D, I take testosterone, I take the pregnant lady's urine, I take a peptide that is an amino acid peptide that's also injectable. I take my Ritalin, I take my blood pressure medications, all these things. But I mean, the supplements, though, is that it's easy to fall for the ease of it. Like, you mean if I just take this pill along with the other 12 that I take every single morning,
yeah,
that I'll be fine.
Yeah.
But the thing is, here's the problem. When you start taking all those and you don't, like, die, you're like, well, it's because of the supplements. It's got to be because I can't stop now.
Right.
Right. So, and you know, the funny thing.
I've taken my body to the edge, and the only thing that's keeping me from pitching myself off.
But the funny thing is, it's like
a 10.
We don't even know what that shit is. Like, I'm sure it probably is fish oil.
Yeah.
But like,
tastes like it.
Yeah. Right. Yes. Yes, it does. That's a big ass pill. But no, I don't. I have a pretty good willpower for something that I feel is going to get in the way of my vigor. So, yeah, like, if, you know, if somebody says, like, you know, sugar is bad for you or drains you of your energy or testosterone or whatever, like soy, I will not eat any fucking thing with soy. That actually is good. Like, guys, men should not consume soy. That's bad for you. But what's that?
Why?
Lowers the testosterone. Increases estrogen.
Okay.
So, yeah, you don't want to take that. Cause like there was even cases of guys that like grew breasts and they were just drinking like a breakfast drink that was all soy protein, but like drinking it every day or like maybe for breakfast and lunch.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it's like, well,
three times a day.
Yeah. No, I guess that would do it. Yeah. So I watch out for that stuff.
I'll wait till after the show to look this stuff up.
Yes, yes. But that one is true. But no, there isn't, like, I'm trying to think of something that I know. Well, I'll tell you this much. There is stuff that I'd like to consume a lot more of. And I've recently been battling this ever since I quit smoking. Your sense of smell comes back.
Yeah.
And I am not ashamed to admit that I have felt the strongest allure. I've never like been a huffer of anything, but I love the smell of tires so much. Like when I go, like there's a tire part of Costco that you can go into and it's just filled with tires. And I just like stand in there and I'll just get lightheaded and just, it's just pleasure on pleasure. Really, like kind of like some people are like that with gasoline, you know, or like a new car smell.
Yeah, okay.
But like, I just want to take all that in. But it turns out, I looked it up. I'm like, is huffing tires dangerous? And it is actually.
No.
So somehow that stuff can like get into you.
How do you huff a tire?
Well, just I don't need to get right up on it. I just need to be around a lot of them.
Do they mean like if a tire's on fire, don't breathe that?
That can't be good.
No,
yeah.
That's not good at all.
No. But I also like we've talked about this a little bit before. I know it's kind of getting away from what you're saying, but that's why I asked about the ingestion thing.
Okay.
That sound stuff that I always get the letters wrong. AMSR? ASMR?
Yeah, ASMR.
ASMR, yeah. That, the gum chewing, the gum chomping, I cannot get enough of that. That sound, even in this movie, there was a scene where like, it's not even a sexual thing. Cause it's like even guys like a Burt Reynolds, like a real like consistent gum chomper, you know, it's kind of like forward with their personality, just chomping on that gum, you know, barking out orders or whatever. Like that just makes my spine turn to jelly. I don't know what it is, but that rapid gum chomping makes me feel so good. Oh, I can't even explain it. So yeah, a lot of things and just all of it. What about you? Is there one thing that you continue to ingest a lot of? And that doesn't even necessarily mean good or bad. Maybe you really like carrots. I don't know.
I wish. I do like carrots. No, just like food in general, unfortunately, I've always been a consumer of food as much as I could get away with.
Yeah.
I remember like our parents, when they started leaving us home alone, and I was like, cool, I can eat a whole Tombstone pizza now.
Yeah. You
know, I'm in eighth grade eating an entire Tombstone pizza.
That's the problem, is the quantity, right? So like if Tombstone pizzas came in half the quantity, you'd still eat the whole pizza. There's no reason for you to eat all of that.
Yeah.
But in my mind, it's like, I got to finish the fucking job.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Otherwise you don't, it's like the level of satisfaction that comes from eating it won't be complete unless you've finished all that there is.
Right.
Like you have to get to the end of the story.
Right.
Why
even start?
Right, exactly.
Thankfully, I tried eating a whole pizza last night after I got home from Popcorn Festival festivities. I didn't. I stopped myself. I also burnt it. I started it and then walked to 7-Eleven to buy ice cream. And then came back, and it was pretty crispy by then. But I followed the directions on the box, so I don't know. I used to, when Arby's was, you could get 5 for $5.
Oh, yeah.
I would do that and eat 3 on my way home and then get home and be like, I got us 2 roast beef sandwiches.
I do that all the time. Like I'll pick up food for my girls and then like eat it on the way home. And they're like, you didn't have anything for dinner? I'm like, no, I'm just not that hungry. No, just causing like 6 different accidents on the way home as I shove this into my mouth.
I several times have faked phone conversations while in a fast food line. Like I'm getting someone else's order.
Right. Yes.
But it's just for me.
What about when you used to smoke? How much did you enjoy cigarettes when you smoked?
I love cigarettes so much. my mom was right. I got really addicted to them. I was like, I'm fine, Mom. I can quit whenever. That's stupid. It's a stupid thing. If you ever say that out loud, you should smack yourself.
Yes.
At one point, I was having two packs a day.
Wow.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Because I could smoke at work. I worked in a bronze foundry. And my job was to set the pours up, like get molds ready to go, and then heat the metal, and then other guys would pour because I was too fragile. No, I was too young to pour. But I could do everything else. But once like you had X amount of molds backed up, I couldn't do anymore because you have to wait for the other molds to cool and get them off the turntable to put new ones on. So I would bust my fucking ass to fill that table up as fast as I could so that in between pours, I didn't really have anything to do, and so I could have a smoke.
Right there in the foundry?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Well, I guess it's...
This was the mid-90s.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was no problem. Dude, they used to smoke around... there's a degreaser that they use called naphtha.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Insanely flammable.
Absolutely.
Guys would just smoke around that shit all the time.
That's like what lighter fluid is made out
yes.
of.
Yes. Yeah, it's essentially that. So, yeah, you know, we've come a long way in safety standards. Essentially, it was while I was working. We got a new HR guy when I was working at that table. I remember him coming out and, you know, I'm like dropping scrap into a pot of molten metal with a glove on. You know, he's like, you need to be wearing like a jacket in case that splashes. And it's like, I don't want to have to get all dressed up and sit here. And it's so fucking hot back there. Like, I want to sit back there with a jacket on. But eventually it was like, yeah, you had to.
What brand did you smoke?
Boy. I started with Camels, and then I smoked a lot of P-Funks and American Spirits. I went through a phase where I would try pretty much anything.
Yeah.
I got weak-ass lungs, so I couldn't really do really hardcore ones.
Like yeah, Reds.
Reds, yeah. No, thank you.
Did you ever smoke menthols on the regular?
Yes. Oh,
you
yeah,
did?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, you were actually those two packs a day would be menthols?
No, that was before I got into menthols. Oh, I didn't do menthols until I met my wife.
Yeah.
But yeah, I did the Camel Crushes towards the end, and then I finally switched to the Winston Ultralights.
Oh, dear.
That was my send-off.
You know, when I was talking about this with somebody last night, the best part of smoking, and it isn't like... you can't even necessarily tell when this is going to be. It's probably usually when you're drinking along with it. But there are some times when you're smoking a cigarette that every single drag is like the most delicious thing. Like, yeah. It's not just like I'm smoking to do the action. It's like every like hard pull is just delicious in your system. And that's when it's really fun
to smoke. An exhale.
Yeah.
Like a nice deep out of my nose exhale.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's good stuff. Damn. God, you know,
let's take a break. Go have a smoke.
Right.
No, I wouldn't smoke.
No, and that's the thing.
I quit a long time ago.
Well, and that's the shitty part, dude, is that even if you let yourself have that first one just sucks.
It tastes like ass.
Absolutely sucks. But then you just, that's why you got to have another one.
Right.
And another one.
By the third one, you're like, oh no, there's that cool, refreshing flavor.
Have you ever had a food that, like, maybe it was a coffee drink, maybe it was a food, but you went through a stretch where you're like, you got it every single day or close to it. Like,
I lived by King Eros, and I, for a while, lived on, like, I gained a lot of weight.
Okay.
But I ate, like, a Euro sandwich and two pizza puffs, like, a day. Yeah, dude.
Is that in the one sitting? Is that one meal?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's so...
But I don't only do it once.
I'm like, I'm not... My wow is not like in disgust. It's
it
like,
God be.
Damn, that tastes so
yeah,
good,
it
though.
Was delicious.
Dude.
But bad for you.
Euros are so good. And I've said this before, but once a year, usually, annually, I will get one at the drive-thru and think that I can eat it in the car while driving this time. No, it's impossible. It's absolutely impossible. Do you, when you eat a
euro? No one has teeth that can shear through those onions. That's the main problem.
Right. Do they put onions on it? But when you eat one, I remember I actually was after my hernia surgery. A friend of ours goes by the name Cum Dog, brought over some food after my surgery. And, you know, hernia, like, it's not a stomach thing, but it's all relative, you know, down there.
Yeah.
And he's like, hey, like, I know you're recovering or whatever. I just had the surgery. And he's like, I got you a euro. So I started eating it and had the worst gas pains so that I was literally like screaming, just screaming in pain. And he's like, I have to go. Like, I can't listen to you do this. Like, and he just abandoned me there screaming with a half-eaten euro all over me. But But it was probably worth it for those first couple bites. Yeah, gyros are fucking good. So yeah, no, that's funny. When you first asked that question, I'm like, I'm going to have that thing that was like I have to have it. Like I got to have it, but yeah. I don't even know. It used to be the, cinnamon, what was it? The, dolce le leche. Was that the, or the cinnamon dolce latte at Starbucks? I used to have one of those every single day when I got home.
Really?
Oh, absolutely had to with the whipped cream. And, yeah, I loved that. I still insist there's got to be something. Someday they're going to find out the way that we found out that there was cocaine in Coke. Like somebody's going to figure out what the fuck adrenal gland, like children, virgin's blood is in.
It's sugar is what it is.
Is it? Is that it?
That's what it is.
I do love that sugar. No, that's
that was one of
stuff.
My big things when I did work in coffee, and we had some mutual friends of ours be like, I don't like your coffee. I like my coffee. You know, I need this and this and this. And I'm like, well, then you don't like coffee.
Right. Yeah.
You like candy.
Yeah. That's what my dad says to me all the time. You want to drink hot, sweet milk, drink hot, sweet milk. Right. And he gets all pissed off about it. Here's a funny thing to kind of to contemplate for a second. It's like there are some things that you get used to the amount that you use something or consume it, but then you don't really know if that's – it just becomes what you do. I'm thinking about like deodorant, right? So I always want to be, you know, presentable to people and that sort of thing. But I'm – sometimes I wonder if like the – I don't know, like 10 to 12 swipes of deodorant is like way more than you need probably.
10 to 12?
Well, yeah, like it's like yeah, probably.
Wow.
But I mean, life would be. I
guess one swipe. So, like five full back and forths, four to five back and forths, you're saying?
Like, it's pretty vigorous. It's like okay. Yeah. And the thing
like
is.
You're scrambling eggs. You're
think of all the things I could have written a novel by now if I had just like done a few, like fewer swipes of deodorant, right. Like all the time I'm wasting. Yeah. But it's like, that's how much I put on. So. You know, I'm not
someone
gonna
could have read
now.
A novel in the time we've been not talking about this movie.
Right. Well, let's talk about it because we actually like this one, by God.
Yeah. All right, let's get into it. Excuse me. I'm going to pump up my energy. I'm ready to go. All right. Let's get into the Wikipedia facts of the blob. This was written by Chuck Russell and Frank Darabont, a name that keeps popping up. It was also directed by Chuck Russell. It stars Kevin Dillon, Shawnee Smith, and Donovan Leddich. Dude, I thought he was great
in
this
movie.
He's
pretty good in this.
I was like, this is a year apart from Cutting Class, and it was before Cutting Class?
What?
Yes, because Cutting Class is 89.
Oh, shit, you're right. God, yeah, this was.
So he got infinitely worse at acting somehow in a year.
Yeah.
All right, financials, it had a budget of $10 million, a box office only $8.2 million. Surprise, surprise. Let's do Nansum, and then we'll get into some spoilers. One night, outside the town of Arborville, California, an unidentified flying object crashes in the woods. An old bum and his dog go to investigate, and they find an odd, gooey substance that suddenly attaches itself to the old man's hands. He flees back into town, where he's rescued by three high school students. Paul, the football star. Brian, the rebellious bad boy. And Meg, the woman. They take him to the hospital, where Brian notices that half the old man has been eaten away. And then he is attacked by the same gelatinous life form, now even bigger in size. Meg witnesses Brian's demise, and while the goo retreats from the hospital, Meg tries to convince Brian to help. But to be honest, he's not much of a helper, being as he's so rebellious and all. But after Brian sees the line cook at a diner be sucked into a sink drain, he and Meg set off to discover what they're dealing with and how to stop it. They soon find that their sleepy town is not only the feeding ground for a giant jelly monster, but is now infested with the worst threat of all, government scientists. Will the teen save the town from the terror, or will the city limits now feature a sign that says, "Welcome to Arborville, population, the blob."
That's awesome.
There you go.
Oh, that's great.
Real quick, while I was doing Nansum, I was thinking, I feel bad that Nancy gets a bit here. And I was thinking, if you want to add it, because Jess watches a lot of these movies with you.
Absolutely.
I was thinking maybe a little feature for her. Does she give the movie the Jess yes?
Oh, yeah. The Jess?
The Jess.
Yeah, she liked this one.
So, yeah, we can... If you want to, if you are into implementing it, we can do it at the end.
Yes.
So we could start the show with Nan and end it with Jess.
Yes. Bookend it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Perfect. So spoiler alert, this movie gets a GS.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. It does indeed. So yeah, I had watched this movie shortly after it came out on video. I think it had a fair amount of press. I don't remember it exactly, but people knew about The Blob. This isn't some obscure movie. Like, it had a theatrical release. Obviously,
it was a classic 50s.
Yeah.
Drive-in. Like, right. You knew about The Blob when you were a kid.
You did. And what happened with this whole thing was that, so we've got Chuck Russell, localish guy, Park Ridge, okay. Illinois. And then he grew up in Chicago, and he was inspired by the theater scene there as well as Second City.
Did we do something by him before?
Yeah, we did, and I don't know what it was. Oh, Nightmare 3.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. So he was looking for something because he had worked as an executive director or executive producer on a lot of stuff. And then, of course, there's also Frank Darabont. I didn't realize he was French, but he is. So he was a French refugee, actually. And he came all the way to Hollywood to work as an employee at the concession stand at the movie theater.
Oh, he was born in France?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I didn't know that either.
Yeah, his family fled. There was some sort of Hungarian Revolution, not as popular as the French Revolution, but, I mean, adjacent. And so he started as a PA, a production assistant on Hell Night, which we should also do. We've been talking about Hell Night forever. That's the one that has the human jaw from Friday 4.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the dude that gets his head slammed into the... Yeah. So he was working as a PA on that, and Chuck Russell was a producer on that. So that's how they got to know each other. And Chuck Russell had been doing this producing stuff, and he wanted to get into the creative side of film. But he felt like he needed like a property. Like he didn't want to just write something brand new, you know, out of the blue. He's like, I want to hit the ground running. I want to have something that I can build on. And so that's when he thought of The Blob, because at the time nobody was really talking about The Blob from 1958, I believe.
Yeah, something like that.
So it was kind of a dead, you know, topic. I mean, it was a big movie at the time in the 50s, and everybody, like you said, was familiar with it.
But like it was considered like a classic movie monster, I feel, when we were very young.
Yes, but yet at the same time, we're still in, now granted, sort of the latter years, but we're still in the full swing of Freddy and Jason and all of these masked guys and killers and serial killers. So nobody was really thinking about something like The Blob. But he's like, I can take this. The first one is probably a lot more of a commentary, a social commentary. But he's like, I can make it scary. I can make it fun. I can make it gross and more colorful and just, you know, really get something more fun out of the whole thing. So he reaches out to the producer, Jack Harris, of the original film. And says, hey, I'd like to do this. You know, are you willing to sell the rights? Had absolutely no problem selling the rights because he probably needed the money. And so Russell and Darabont get to work on the script. And so they write the script. They take it to New Line, which New Line was still kind of new-ish at that point. But they were really on a roll with the Nightmare series and other things. And so they take it... to New Line. New Line is really excited to work with Chuck Russell on anything he wants to do except a remake of The Blob. And then they're like, no, we don't really want to do that. That's kind of not our style, but we really want you to do Nightmare 3. And we've got a rough script from Wes. And if you and Frank can pump up that script and flesh it out and direct it, then maybe we'll circle back.
Did Darabont work on that script?
Yeah. Yeah.
God, I don't remember that.
So now he was so desperate to get into the business. He's like, fine, I'll do Nightmare. And he was the one that I was kind of ripping on, where he's like, what if we just took, you know, went into the dreams and had it be more of a carnival type atmosphere and basically ruin the franchise? Right. Even though I'm walking that back now, because I said that before, but I really do like some of those sequels better than I had said before. And we had always said that we were not going to do any more nightmare movies, but you never know.
Probably will.
So he, you know, he does the Nightmare 3, which at that time I believe was the most successful of the Nightmares 1, 2, and 3, and it did actually really well. So they're like, fine, you can do whatever you want to do. And he went immediately back to The Blob. And he said that for him, not for anybody else that would ever see a connection, but for him, the two movies, Nightmare 3 and The Blob, are completely intertwined. Oh. And he said, this is the quote, I tried to make The Blob, and in trying to make The Blob, I made Elm Street. And in making Elm Street, I got to make The Blob. It all just kind of worked out. And they considered using some CGI. I didn't even know that CGI existed in 88, but I guess it did.
Yeah.
But it was so expensive, and on top of expensive, shitty.
Yeah.
That he's like, no, this hasn't come along far enough for me to use yet. So they went with their own practical effects, which is such a great thing, because this movie has wonderful effects for the time.
Yeah.
And let me just chat about those real quick before we get into the movie, because this stuff is interesting. The first movie used dyed red silicone and a thing called, that I had never heard of, a barrage balloon.
Oh, what's that?
A barrage balloon, if you see a picture of it, it looks like a blimp. It looks like a giant blimp. But what they would do is they'd use it in World War II. So you send this blimp up way up in the air, and then you hang steel cables from it.
Okay.
And what it did was it protected kind of low flying aircraft that would be targeting ground targets.
Oh, they
don't want to
cables.
Yeah, they don't want to fly through the cables. So that's what a barrage balloon is. So it's basically a massive inflatable. So what they would do is just use that, cover it in the silicone, and that's how it undulated and moved.
Wow.
It was actually a balloon. Now for this movie, they made blob quilts. And what that is like they took this translucent sheer silk fabric, and they would stuff it full of methicil, which is a food thickening agent. And they would kind of like, before they put the thickening agent in there, they'd kind of like airbrush some like veins and cool shit on the silk, and then push all of that gel into there and then seal it off. So what you end up with is, imagine a quilt that is filled with gel and weighs like 200 pounds.
Oh, wow.
And they would drape these quilts of different sizes over, maybe it's animatronics, maybe sometimes it's human puppeteers, or fiberglass forms or whatever. So that's what they did, which makes a lot of sense, because then you don't have to create the full mass of the blob down to the core. The core is just whatever, the animatronics, and you just drape these blankets over it.
Yeah.
So that's how they did it.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Pretty awesome. Yeah.
Right.
And it really, really works. And Donovan, we just call him Donovan.
Yeah, we just call him Donovan.
He likened the working with those blob quilts to suffocating.
Well, I can believe that, yeah.
So there was that, but it works well for the scene. And
meanwhile, people today are paying hundreds of dollars for a weighted blanket. Donovan's exactly. Like,
yeah,
I can't take it.
Yeah, he's like, let me show you my experience with a weighted blanket. But yeah, so the filmmakers kind of wanted the blob to be a sort of, like an inside out inside out stomach, so that the acid would not only absorb, because in the 58 movie it just absorbed things.
Yeah.
But in this they wanted it to burn and sear and melt, which is wonderful. And one other just quick thing before we get into the movie, I found out about this thing called putter sear, which is spelled P-W-D-R-E space S-E-R, Welsh, if you're wondering, okay. Of course. When it doesn't make any sense whatsoever, it's Welsh. But it translates to star jelly. And there are these things that we don't really even have a full scientific explanation for, these deposits of gel on the ground in just out in the open, and literally scientists don't know where it comes from or what it is. There's also, there was a report from, it was before the original blob. There were some guys that were out line, phone linemen, that there was a giant, I don't know, even know what you would call it, just blob. Okay, we'll go with blob. A blob of ooze that was hanging over a telephone pole and dripping down. And that it was never really explained what the substance was.
Yeah.
So it wasn't, it's not like based on a true story. Like, but I mean, enough to be like, what the fuck was that?
Right.
Probably dropped out of an airplane or something. Yeah. Who knows? But that star jelly stuff, that is, in this day and age, for scientists to still be like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, some people think that it might be like a regurgitated part of an animal that animals don't eat. Like they'll eat the animal, but they'll regurgitate up this one part of it. Some people think that. Some people think it's just like some crazy shit from the sky.
Yeah.
So pretty interesting. But this is a more exciting and down-to-earth version of the blob, which I wanted to ask you in general, just before we get started. What do you think about the blob as far as how it stacks up being a movie villain?
Well, it's, you know, kind of super overpowered. It's unstoppable, except for the cold stuff, you know. Yeah, I don't know.
That's Does it work question. For you as, a,
yeah,
as an antagonist?
I think the it works in that the way it kills is really fun to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah, the way it just eats away some of these people is unexpected, I would say, and how graphic it is.
Yeah.
Especially the kid. Man, I know I said, like, that's, I used it in my intro, but man, that when my kid actually watched this one with me, you know, it always starts with, I'll sit in there with you while I am on my computer, but I always catch her watching. but yeah, so there's a scene where they're in the sewers trying to get away and one of the kids gets dragged away. And that for, you know, kids these days where every child is protected to ad nauseum. She's just like, that kid's fine, right? And then he just pops up with the stretched back, and he's already disintegrated. I'm like, nah, we kill a kid in the 80s.
Yeah,
no
we
problem.
Do. Yes,
no
we
problem.
Do. We used to have a thing in Central Park called wilding, and it was just kids running around fucking with people. And just for no reason, it was just called wilding. And yeah, we didn't give a shit. Like, it was every man and child for themselves.
Yeah.
And what was really great about that and gratifying in that kill in particular was that actor that played that kid is the most annoying person that's ever been 90210.
Oh,
ever.
He's on 90210.
He was David Silver, Brian Austin Green's friend, who, like, it's kind of funny.
More annoying than Brian Austin Green on that show?
Believe it or not, absolutely.
Good
yes.
Lord.
And the thing was, his acting skills never progressed what you see past what you see in this movie. Literally, like the big eye and the eyebrows going up.
Oh,
and that's all he does. And what was so funny is that his character was so awful in 90210, you really knew where the writers were going, where it's like, maybe, you know, some people like become a lifeguard this summer. We'll have this relationship go together. And maybe Scott starts playing with guns. And then about five episodes later, he shoots himself and that was it. So it's so good. But it was great to see him die in such a melty fashion. It's so gnarly.
I just saw
a clip
of 90210 of Brian Austin Green like rapping at a school dance.
Oh,
and everyone
it's awful.
Doing line dancing. I was like, this is one of Tim's favorite shows.
Yeah, like I got to rethink this podcast shit.
But I know that clip was probably shown to me because it is so bad.
Yes. No, yeah, he is. And he's one of those people, you ever known people that can't do something physical without like hanging their tongue out of their mouth? Yeah. It works for Michael Jordan, but anybody else looks ridiculous. And he was just one of those people. This movie had, I mean, it took a little while to get made, but as you heard me say, came together relatively easily. And then now all you've got, here we are, we've got the product of the movie itself. And the one thing that really struck me about this was that Is it the most well-written thing in the world? I actually think it's pretty well-written. Yeah. It's funny. I like it. But it's not, you know, changing anybody's life. But you, from everyone, it doesn't matter if it's the mechanic or the sheriff or the waitress or whomever it might be, everybody is played by a really solid character actor.
Yeah.
And it makes all the goddamn difference in the world. And so I just, that's what fleshed out the whole thing. And on top of it, this is the real big question for this episode. You mentioned Kevin Dillon.
Yeah.
He has sure a brother.
Did. He does.
Tell me what you think about.
Why are we bringing up his brother?
Tell me what you think about his brother and what you think about him. In comparison.
I mean, I'd rather watch Kevin Dillon. No, I mean, Kevin Dillon's fine. I don't like, what's his first name?
Matt. What don't you like about Matt?
I don't know. I just don't like his acting at all.
Really?
I'm sure it is then compounded with how much my friends do love him.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, I'm sorry. I got to give pushback on this. So I have to feel like I have to take a hard stance.
Yeah.
How he's not good. Which I think is reflected in how people treat his career. So I believe I'm right. No, he's actually just in a Wes Anderson movie. He was in Asteroid City with a small part, and he was fine in that. I liked him, and there's something about Mary, a movie I didn't like at all.
Well, so that says something then, that if you're willing to like him in that.
Yeah, he was.
Did you ever see The Outsiders?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's
Brooding Tough Guys is not my. I don't really empathize with those.
I love them. I love them.
Of course. Stop being a baby, you cry big tough guy. Jeez, oh, Pete.
But you like Kevin,
he's
though.
Not now, gonna walk again.
now, Kevin.
That's a Brian Attain.
Kevin doesn't really have Matt's looks.
No, listen, yeah.
He's got looks, but they are, it's kind of like, you ever see the Island of Dr. Moreau?
Yeah.
Where there's like stages of people going from animal to human.
Yes.
He's one of those middle stages.
Yeah, I was going to say he looks like a clone of Matt Dillon that's just not formed all the way yet.
Yeah.
It's kind of smooth.
Right,
And not, you know, the features are there, but not defined.
It's a prototype, so he's kind of funny looking. His hair is either awful or amazing, depending on how you want to look at it. There's a lot of it. It's got a lot of body.
Sure.
The style is horrendous.
Yeah.
Very mulleted.
It's comically big, though.
Yes, it is. Almost sort of a juxtaposition of a blob in its own right.
Good point.
But so there's that. But what he has and what Matt has is this really great, nice baritone voice with that accent that they have, which is kind of funny because they're not from Brooklyn. They're actually from their dad was from New Rochelle, which is about 30 minutes north of the Bronx. So naturally, there's probably an accent there. They're not faking anything by having that accent. But what's really funny is that they grew up in Larchmont, and Larchmont actually has this thing called the Larchmont Lockjaw. And that is like the millionaire, like on Gilligan's Island, you know, that sort of clenched mouth, you know, that sort of thing. Right. Which they don't really have. But yet they have these great, just kind of like standard New York accents that are wonderful to listen to.
Yeah.
A little strange when they are supposed to be natives of this town in California.
Right.
But the accents are all across the board.
They're probably emulating something they saw on TV.
Maybe that's it. Yeah. Yeah.
You've got access with television to a plethora of accents.
Yeah.
Why not maybe, pick one up that you like?
Maybe in that universe, he watched his brother's milk commercial from 1983. Have I played that for you before? Have I played that?
I've seen it before.
Oh, it's so good. Yeah. You know, some guys my age, man.
Oh, my God.
They forget about drinking milk. I don't know why. Maybe they forget how good milk is. Milk's great. It's natural. It's satisfying. I like mine ice cold. Milk's got everything, so don't you forget it. I'm drinking milk for good. And it's like, It's like, why is he?
Make that guy a movie star.
I've never seen. I like milk. I really do.
Yeah.
But I don't know. And I know that obviously it's just him taking on a gig, but it's like, what was packaged in that deal where it's like, if you do this milk commercial where you love milk more than any human ever has, then we'll let you do this movie. But that's the thing though. They have these great, great accents. And then there's also that it's Kevin Dillon's demeanor too. Like, the way that he handles having that softer side,
yeah,
and the way that he interacts with Shawnee Smith, like, he's just not trying, like, he's not annoyingly trying to be cool or right. macho. It's kind of effortless.
Yeah.
And it's really charming. He seems
kind of targeted, too.
Yeah.
Like, I don't really see him do anything bad in the movie, so him immediately being threatened by the cop.
Yeah.
And they immediately suspect him. Like, what? Trouble afoot? Ah, it's 17-year-old roustabout Brian. Roustabout.
Yeah. Like, what harm could the kid who, at least by all indications, lives in the woods? Right. Like, what is he doing wrong to anyone? But, yeah, they are out to get him. And, yeah, but he's
Chekhov's ramp at the beginning of this movie.
Yes. And he's just really fun to watch. Shawnee Smith is somebody who you'll immediately recognize, even if you don't immediately know where from. If somebody says the word Saw, you'll be like, oh, shit. Yeah, she's in Saw.
Yeah.
But you were talking about how you were thinking that she had something else going on in the middle. Did we ever figure out what that was?
She was on Becker. Maybe, you know, Becker.
Yeah.
A show that was a big hit that was on for a lot of years. Yeah, maybe that was it. I mean, I was like, oh, that would explain like her longevity. But I didn't watch Becker.
She's really recognizable though. Yes. I mean, like,
Yeah. But and, yeah, definitely Saw. Yeah.
Yeah. And now here's the thing. I'm admitting this on a horror podcast. I'm not overly familiar with the Saw franchise. It's probably the one that I'm weakest on. Is she in multiple Saws?
Oh, yeah.
She is.
Yes.
Is she like the Saw girl? Like, is she the face of Saw other than Jigsaw?
Well, I mean, there are like five faces. You don't know how. So you've never gone down the rabbit hole of the sequels?
No, dude. Tim,
they're so convoluted. They're so convoluted.
Like, I have a hard enough time staying awake for a regular movie.
Like, literally, there are 9 Saw movies, and I think 7 of them take place within 3 days.
That's crazy.
And, like, that's always the twist at the end. Like, oh, Saw 5 is going on while Saw 2 is going on?
Oh, my God. Yeah. What's funny is the exterminator at my office looks exactly like Jigsaw. Nicest guy in the world, I would say. Wouldn't hurt a fly.
Tobin
but
Bell.
Yeah, but the funny thing is, was there was a day that I just say like, hey Mark, how's it going? And he's just the nicest dude, looks exactly like Jigsaw. And then one day it just occurred to me, like, he is a killer. Like,
yeah,
this my guy is actually a killer. Like, his business is killing things. Oh. And he's,
wait, what's his business?
He's an exterminator.
Oh,
he's a pest control guy. And I'm like, God, maybe he is Jigsaw. Like, he's just
is he creative?
He does a lot of the same thing from visit to visit that I can tell, but I mean, you never know.
I was looking at Shawnee Smith. Yeah. For me, the other big thing is she was the young girl in Who's Harry Crumb, a John Candy movie I saw several times.
Is that a good one?
It's worth watching.
I'm kind of like revisiting John Candy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely. Yes. If you're like, I'm in the mood to watch John Candy. Yeah.
Okay. She's got to be, was that like around this time?
That 88? Was about 5 years later.
Oh, okay. But she's wonderful in it. Like, here's the one thing that's really exciting about this movie. And you almost, it's so impossible that you can't even expect another movie to be able to mimic this. But we talk a lot on this show about tone. And if a movie, especially if it has an uneven tone. This movie is really interesting because what they do is they don't necessarily tie themselves to having a unifying tone throughout the movie.
Yeah.
As long as the scene itself is within that tone. Meaning, so you can have something that is almost to the point of lampoon. Like, you can have the guy that, like, you know, tries to get his girlfriend drunk or so that he can, you know, get with her or whatever. And he opens up his trunk and it's like this display of, you know, just like every drink you could think of. And he's got a bunch of different class rings so he can give his ring to every girl or whatever. It's he's using like a battery powered hand mixer to mix the drinks. Completely unrealistic. And it's almost spoofing. But it works in the scene. Like you don't say like, oh, that's just ridiculous.
Yeah, I've carried water bottles in my trunk before. They'd all fall over.
Right, exactly. So, but yet we can go from that to Shawnee Smith being like, you know, having experienced the blob for the first time in the movie and being really rattled and really shaken. And it's kind of a serious scene with her mom. And it doesn't feel jumbled. It doesn't feel all over the place. It kind of is, but they are doing such a good fucking job. And again, I'm going to say this a million times, but for you and I being actors, like, you know, a lot of times we talk about all the other aspects of a film other than the acting, but it's the acting that saves this movie.
Yeah.
That makes it great. Cause even that lascivious, like, jerko guy trying to get this girl drunk so he can bang her.
Yeah.
Like, that guy's really good at playing that part.
Yes.
And he's funny. Sorry. I know
he's funny.
He's funny. What he's doing is not funny, but it was, you know, we're killing kids. I mean, like the gloves are off in this movie.
No, it was funny because, that scene came on. I mean, he doesn't even do anything, but you know what that scene is. And even my kid, 2 seconds in, I just hear, pretty rapey.
Right. Uh-huh. And what's funny, though, is that he's even, and I'm not justifying anything, but he's even like, once the girl has passed out in the front seat, he's like trying to do the right thing, like continue a conversation. Like, she's completely unconscious, but
stuffy, like, in here.
Yeah, like, maybe just if we just undo one button, like he undoes the button, she doesn't move at all, and he's like, that's better. Yeah. Like, you know, no reaction from her. But yeah, really, really funny stuff. And some character actors that you'll recognize, Art LaFleur.
Yeah.
Who plays the pharmacist. This is the movie where I learned about ribbed condoms.
Oh.
And I don't even know if I necessarily understood it once I did learn about it.
Yeah.
At that time, I would have been in 7th or 8th grade.
Right.
Here's one question, and I don't want to be, you know, a jerk myself, but let me just ask the question to the universe. If anybody wants to respond, they can. Does it do anything for you, the ribs?
Yeah.
I know that they used to sell those ones in the gas station that like had like quarter inch studs on them. Have you ever seen those before?
No.
I'm not sure that's doing anybody any favors. But do the ribs,
folks, don't buy your condoms?
No, right.
The gas station vending machine.
Yeah. Is anybody even using those anymore?
I haven't seen one in years.
No, but I mean like condoms.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
Oh, okay. I didn't know what a ribbed condom was, found out what it was. It's a nice, fun scene. And yes, you're right. Donovan is really good. He's also in that scene. And for as much as I hated him in Cutting Class, he's like exactly what he's supposed to be in this movie. Even his weird face doesn't bother me that much.
No,
looks I'm fine.
Like, yeah, did he have chin surgery or?
I have no idea.
I believed him as, he wasn't like a super confident jock, which is fine. So it kind of played into his, you know, weak little face a little bit where he's not super confident, but I did take him more as an attractive person that people would enjoy being with physically.
Right. Yes. Which is a pretty low bar.
Right.
Like just that somebody wouldn't be repulsed by your physical presence.
Yeah.
But here's
the Cutting Class mustache. Didn't help that stubbly mustache.
Yeah, no, right. That was wrong. But, you know, the thing is that we've talked about this before. Like, it's not just the acting that I keep referencing. It's also, and this sounds like a really dumb thing to say, it's just when a movie really gives attention to every single aspect of it. And what I'm thinking of is even just the intro to this movie. So we get a cool, like, eerie space intro.
Uh-huh.
Then we go into these scenes with this sort of ominous music, and it's a town that appears to be abandoned.
Yes.
And so you're like, what's going on here? But you don't even have a story. You don't even have any literally humans in it. I mean, there's nothing but just these buildings, these structures. But there's something that makes you want to look at it, though.
Yeah.
Like, it draws you in. And does a really neat job of then, like, showing you all these, I mean, probably 15, 20 different locations. And then we see some bleachers, and the camera does a nice, like, pan up, like a crane shot. And then we realize, oh, it's because it's football day.
Everyone's at the football game.
Everyone's at the football
game. Everyone loves high school football.
Yes, literally every single person in the town. And, but it was, yeah, but so it's that attention to detail, that attention to tone and pulling you in. Because normally a movie like this would start with a scene with them in school and, like, goofing off in the hallways,
right,
and knocking the books out of somebody's hand and just, like, trying to set up the character.
Yeah.
Here they tried to set up the town, because I guess that's really, when it comes to the Blob, he's not, well, Blob doesn't give a fuck.
Like, no.
He's not out to get any one person. He's out to just get bigger.
Right.
He or she.
Consume.
And so I think that the Blob is great because you never have to deal with an actor that ages.
True.
You never have to worry about running out, like, the same old jokes and things like that. Like, the Blob is just mindless and doing its thing.
Yeah.
Here's the problem, though. Somebody, and don't, not you, but just the collective you, don't you fucking lie to me if you're going to say that this wouldn't happen. If this was a franchise, some dumb motherfucker is going to make that Blob talk at one point or other.
Yeah.
Somebody's going to fuse it with, like, AI or human DNA.
Yep.
And then it's going to have
it
some.
It absorbs something in a genetic lab and.
And then it
takes the form of our lead protagonist, dead mother, who then he talks to.
Right.
They have a heart to heart.
I'll have some, like, like, bitch ass, like, catchphrase, like, blame it on the Blob, like, you know, or whatever you might say. Like, and you're going to be like, oh, fuck, they ruined it.
Yeah.
But no, thankfully we don't have
it's
that.
Blobbing time.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, it's just as it is right now, it's perfect. It does not speak, it does not care. It's just going places.
Yeah.
It's just got to stay on the move. And so it's really great in that regard. And let me ask you this question, though, and I'm asking you because I don't know the answer.
Mm-hmm.
Does anyone say the Blob in this movie?
Good question. I don't really think so.
And more, and the deeper question is how does if there was a massive Blob overtaking the town,
yeah,
and you just said, like, you know, the thing, people would know what you're talking about, right?
Yeah.
They probably would guess. But, like, how does nobody even references it to, like, another person. Like, we got to watch out because the whatever is coming.
What do they say? Cause it's like, I saw him, like, taken or. Yeah.
They don't really, like. Like,
so never, like, the thing or anything like that?
No.
A creature?
They never really reference it in any way.
I mean, yeah, never the Blob, but just simply because that is. It kind of suffers from the thing where we as the audience know of the existence of the movie The Blob.
Yes.
So then it seems weird for them to then unknowingly, where that movie doesn't exist in that world.
Right.
And then they would just call it The Blob instinctually, but they wouldn't. We would call it The Blob because we know the movie The Blob. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and maybe, and I promise I'm not going down a slippery slope here, but maybe it seems to be what most people, if they are going to be concerned with something and actually identify it, it's really more of the concern of the people that they're trying to get away from or that are doing wrong, other than, like, oh my God, that thing is coming. You know, like nobody ever says anything like that. So let me ask you this real quick.
Man. Yeah.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
It's so strange.
Probably just a lot of it's here.
Right. But even, I guess that's really the great part of it because it makes it more immediate. Like Nobody knows what's going on. There's that great scene that you referenced where the cook gets sucked into the sink.
Yeah.
Which is a narrow passageway mm-hmm. for a human body to travel through. And they do a really good job of saying, like, we know, like, we're going to make it look fucked up. At one point, there's two legs and one hand sticking up. And the best part is that when it finally all goes down, there's just this shot of the waitress, Shawnee Smith, and Kevin Dillon standing there like, what the fuck was that?
Yeah. Dude, the shot of the pipe, like, expanding yeah. quickly, like, that's in the trailer, and that has stuck with me. Like, I remember seeing that as a kid.
Yeah.
That it was a very cool
so maybe
way that, to show kind of what's going on there.
Maybe
even though
that's,
a pipe wouldn't really do that.
That's the neat part of it, though, is that there's not enough time to reference it. You're just running for your life or being attacked unbeknownst.
Yeah.
Speaking of being attacked unbeknownst, like, there's a really, really nice scene in the beginning between the sheriff and the waitress in the diner.
Yeah.
And it's really cute.
It's Jeffrey DeMunn.
There it is.
Who we've covered before.
Love that
guy.
He's
a Frank Darabont guy.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. So he, you know, it's a really adorable kind of flirtation there where he wants to ask the waitress out and she, you know, unbeknownst to him is more, you know, keen to that than he would think. And so he's supposed to meet up with her later that night. The one thing that sucks is, I mean, I almost had to laugh at it, was that, you know, people are fighting this thing unbeknownst. They don't know how to fight it. They don't know how to fend it off, but they're surviving.
Yeah.
Here's a man who's supposed to be the protector of the town. And at one point he leaves the station because he's concerned about the waitress and what's going on out there. And then the next thing we know, we just see him in the blob.
Oh, my God.
So it's like, what
did
you?
The best reveal.
Oh, dude, it's so good. But at the same time, it's like, how bad did you fuck up? Like,
well,
did
you, yeah, just, you just immediately walk into it? Yeah,
right, exactly. Like, just jump in, like, swinging your fists. Like,
but yeah, that reveal rules because that's that whole scene is set up to be like, he's going to come rescue her.
Yes.
And they're going to get away because they've set up the so cute too, where, you know, he's asking her out and she's like, I, you know, I got to close the diner. And then on his bill is like, I get off at 10, which yeah. is, you can't get more of a signal than that.
Yeah.
Even I would read that signal.
Yes.
So, yeah. So you're just like, so through that whole sequence, he's like, I'm going there. And then she is being pursued by the blob. She's in a phone booth. And there is, it's kind of a moment where you're like, okay, he'll save her. I don't know how yeah. he will in this scenario because she seems, it's encasing the thing. And as you're having that thought, yeah, his disintegrated face just kind of yeah. floats by the glass in the phone booth.
And continues to stretch yes. as it's
oh
going.
My God, it's so, like, cool looking.
It's great. And then you
with her just have this moment of just like, yeah. Fuck. As yeah. the thing just collapses in on itself.
And even his eyes are kind of moving a little bit. I'm not saying he's very much alive, but it's like, if he is, he's like, I'm trying. Yeah.
Because it's also while she's on the phone
yeah.
requesting his yeah. help, like, send him.
Yeah.
Right. As it streaks by.
It's so good. And then she gets the absolute fuck blasted out
oh,
of her
yeah.
when the blob works its way in from underneath
the door.
It's going
to happen that way that night, one way or the other.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. You got blasted with a bunch of goo. yeah, she definitely got it. And it's so cool. Like, it's such a powerful fucking blast. Like,
yeah.
it looks, even though I know it's a dummy in there, but that looks very unsafe. But it's a great, great thing. And what's neat about it then is that as much as I'm like, oh, shit, I like that guy. Like, if he dies and then motherfucking kid dies, it's mm-hmm. like anybody can die in this movie.
Yeah.
So it really ramps up the stakes that way. I like that it doesn't overdo what ultimately ends up being this sort of, I guess it's not even a subplot. It's the plot itself is that there's a government involvement to some extent, but they really don't press that too hard.
No.
I mean, they just kind of say like, hey, we were trying some things. It got out of hand and now we're trying to deal with it.
Yeah.
And so I liked that they just kept it closer to a horror movie rather than trying to do that. Well, the commentary had already been done.
Yeah.
So that, like I said, that was his effort from the beginning, was let's just make a fun horror movie.
Yeah. It does feel missing, though, especially because it's a remake. If you're just going to remake something, like, what, you know, do your own thing then, if you're just going to make a horror movie.
I see what you're saying.
Like, I need to take this old thing and, you know, say something else with it. Say something else with it.
Well, it's you make a good point, because usually when you take something old and you make it new, you're usually adding to it. It's almost as if they just took something away.
Right.
But then, you know, I mean, I guess that's what he was looking to do with it. But if anything, he was just, I mean, well, let's put it this way. This was a rabbit hole that I promised I would myself earlier. That as I was watching the movie, I'm like, I'm not going to do this because the movie's point was to be fun.
Yeah.
So I didn't want to be like, see, motherfuckers. So I just told myself, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to enjoy it for what it is. And but what we do get, we still feel that it's sinister enough to be something that we can be mad at, for causing it. I really like that choice of
I'm assuming the government involvement was the big change. I don't know really the plot of the first movie.
Yeah, the first one is more about it's an outer space thing, but I think it's more of like it just lands here in a meteorite. Whereas ours is we're sending something up into space,
right,
kind of like we're playing around with nature and now we're suffering the consequences,
yeah, which
that's kind of we talked about that with what the hell's his name? The writer with the yeah, we've got to get video at some point, Color Out of Space.
Oh, OK. Oh,
yeah, dude.
I was going to say L. Ron Hubbard. No, that's not right.
But I know what you meant. It's
oh my God.
Yeah, the fucking
Cthulhu.
Guy. Right. You just said the harder thing to say.
Yeah.
Than his name.
Why am I blanking on
dude?
This is bad.
I'm sweating.
Sunday morning.
It'll come to us. So anyhow, Lovecraft, for God's
Thank
sake,
you.
Jesus.
H.P. Lovecraft.
Yes.
I knew there were initials in there.
So part of his themes were kind of like if you play around with nature, then you get smacked back. So that's kind of an angle that they have here, but you're right. It's certainly not featured heavily. So, but I do like that guy that plays the main government agent or doctor, whatever, scientist, whatever he may be. He does a nice job of being like pretty sinister.
Yeah.
And like even to the point where when they're down in the sewer and I wrote a note here. So he says something, you know, kind of like here the people are literally like 12 feet down in the sewer. All they've got to do is just crawl out and then they're safe.
Yeah.
But then he like so many retail stores at the end of Pride Month says, close the manhole. But anyhow, but he does do a good job of like being like the antagonist, the bad guy.
Yeah.
To where the blob's like, if he's the bad guy, then maybe the blob's not so bad. Just doing its thing. Like it doesn't fucking know. Funny thing.
It's true.
Funny thing about the blob. I'm not going to lie. Kind of pretty.
Yeah. It's like a Color Out of Space thing.
Like a pink and purple kind of vibe. Like it looks like the first blob in 58 was. Yeah. The first blob was like, you know, just like a deep red, but yeah, this one is like that pink, purple, iridescent kind of thing. As I watched it the second time, I picked up a little bit more on what do they call that effects where you have an actor in front of, it's not a green screen. It's like they're literally in front of a film screen with the footage.
Yeah. What is that called?
I'm not sure.
I don't know. Superimposing.
Yeah, you see some of that and it's a little like it's really hard to get the lighting right on that to have it match up, but they get as close as you probably can. And it all works. And I think they do a good job of how they manipulate the blob to attack people. So sometimes it is fast and it shoots up your arm, you know, or shoots off of what it's on, dropping from the ceiling. One time it kind of like goes straight up in the air like a giant tentacle and then slams down on this guy.
Yeah,
like,
that was awesome.
That's cool. The kills are great. Like, that was the neat thing. Like, I guess the reason why I didn't revisit this movie more was that I remembered the kills being more like, you know, like, oh, somebody gets absorbed.
Yeah.
But this really, I mean, those are horror kills.
Oh, yeah.
There is a guy.
Especially just seeing, like, Paul, the jock, who you assume will be a main character.
Yes.
To die so quickly and then to, I mean, it's essentially the box cover, right? Is his kill.
Yes.
Yeah. But creepy. Where you're just like, oh, the handsome football star is now, like, his face is peeling back.
Yeah.
It's wicked. It's so cool.
It's fantastic. And what's neat is that Shawnee Smith had not seen Donovan underneath the blob quilt until that take.
Uh-huh.
So that when you see her reaction, that is her first reaction. And he's screaming and looking terrified. Like, they're both equally terrified. Right. But yeah, it's just great. Yeah, I thought that the kills were really aggressive. There's even a really nice one. Like, I love a good back bend. I love a good back break.
Uh-huh.
And there's a point where they're in, like, kind of the town hall that they've been quarantined into, and now the blob is working its way in. And they've boarded up the doors with like bookcases. And for a second, the deputy gets kind of like wrapped around his middle section and pulled into the bookcase.
Yeah.
And for a second, he is demonstrating what my love is for libraries, where he's just fucking the shit out of this bookcase, like being slammed into it by the pelvis until it pulls him all the way through. Oh. And we get that full backwards back break. Awesome.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Those are great. Yeah. Those are great. Probably, just to give it an honorable mention, probably the best back break out there still has to be Friday 6. With the sheriff, where he's trying to protect his daughter outside the cabin.
Yeah.
And then Jason gives him that whole, like, and then we see, like, the feet.
Yes.
Yeah. Best one ever.
Yeah, that's right.
So good. So I sent you a couple pictures via text.
Yeah.
And I'd love to take credit for it. I really, really would. But I read about it somewhere, and then I pulled it up to have the juxtaposition that that poster for It Follows is a really, really great poster. It really tells you nothing about the movie.
Right.
But it's just the way that it's lit. It's a profile shot of a car and then a couple in the back seat. And then I read that it was actually one of, it was either Russell or Darabont said they stole that from us at, I think it's 29 minutes and 50 seconds or 55 seconds. And it's a shot of pretty much the same fucking car.
Yeah, it looks very similar.
And
they kind of change the environment
a little bit.
It. Yeah,
but it's just close enough to where I'm like, they might be onto something there. So I think this movie was influential in that regard. I kept thinking every time I was watching Kevin Dillon's performance that I'm like, well, this is where Matt Damon got his character for Good Will Hunting. Like, this is like, I was just seeing a lot of similarity there. Really, I just like it. Like, there were a couple times where I'm like, who the fuck does he sound like? And I'm like, oh, it's still Matt Damon.
Oh, wow.
Even though it's different accents. But yeah, the movie, I think, for being an hour and a half, packs a lot into that hour and a half. I remember watching it the second time, and I'm like, oh, this thing's got to, like, they have so much more to fit in here. There's no way that they're going to get this all in, but it just moves quick.
Yeah, the end goes pretty fast. That's for sure.
Yeah, because what's the moment where the blob is really just fucking full on doing its thing? Is that, I guess it's when it's in that's the sewer.
Like, yeah, and after they get the snow truck.
Yeah.
And just everyone's out in the street at this point. The whole town's there to fight.
So let's talk about that for a second, because that was the first problem that I had with this movie geographically.
The snowmaking truck
in
California?
Yeah, right. The skiing in California. Like, first of all, where are these accents from? Secondly, where's the skiing? And then I found out, like, Lake Tahoe is in California.
Yeah.
And you can ski there.
Yeah.
But
they don't have, like, a truck you drive around. If you have a ski slope, that needs snow. You just have a machine there.
Right.
Your city utility is not running the ski slope.
Yeah, that's true. You know? I will say, though, I looked up places to ski in California because I wasn't even sure that that existed. Number one, a little bit of a bridge episode, Big Bear.
Oh, yeah.
Just like Witchboard, which, interestingly enough, full circle, Chuck Russell is the one directing Witchboard. The remake.
Oh, the new one.
Yeah.
Oh.
So, yeah, it's a little it's a little bit of a stretch, but we're kind of bringing it back around there. So apparently there is skiing in California. I don't know why they have Southern accents and New York accents, but it's
Southern accents everywhere. You can't avoid it.
I guess so. Yeah.
David Cross has a whole bit on that. Fuck you. I'm from Bozeman, Alabama. Well, fuck you. I'm from Juneau, Alaska. Well, fuck you. I'm from Sacramento, California.
That's great. That part kind of threw me a little bit, but you move past that so fast because it's just, you know.
How are you supposed to know it's a small town if they don't have Southern accents?
Yeah, you know, I guess that people, because we've never been there. It's a small town.
Right.
Who knows? There's that whack-ass island off the coast of North Carolina where they have Scottish accents.
Exactly.
If there was a movie set there and they were speaking in Scottish accents, I'd be like, what the fuck is going on here?
Robert Eggers is like, oh, what? Where?
Right. All the way around, we have this movie that is moving in a really clear direction with good pacing, still heavy with the gore, and ultimately kind of staying true to the established final girl trope. Really, Shawnee Smith is kind of ends up being the hero of the day.
Yeah.
I mean, Paul is sort of the misdirect, Donovan, and he, like, just like you said, and he's taken away. He's kind of a red herring. Then we've got Kevin Dillon, but like you said, he's trying. It's not always very effectual, but I mean, he's trying.
Right.
But she ultimately ends up being the strong one that kind of saves everybody, which I thought was cool.
Yeah.
Now, what did you think of that ending that we get? I have to run to the bathroom real quick, but we have this Reverend character throughout.
Yeah.
Which I don't know. I don't know everything about this guy, but am I supposed to know who that is?
Del Close?
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of the IO Theater?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah.
Del Close invented the Herald, a very popular improv form.
Well, why don't you talk a little bit about that?
About the Herald? Yeah. Del Close is also, you would know him from Ferris Bueller. He is the, in what way does the author, I'm not going to do the whole part, but that's Del Close. Del Close started the IO Theater in Chicago. He came up with, he and his partner, Sharna, I forget her last name, they came up with this form called The Herald, and it is a long-form improv exercise. A full Herald can take anywhere from 20 to 30 minutes, and it is essentially, you start off what's called a game, so it's not like a structure, it's not like a conventional scene, right? Like, you're not like, hey, Bill, how's the mall today, blah, blah, blah. It's more of a, you try to establish a feeling. It's, listen, improv, while fun to do, is also a just shitty art form. Because you get moments like this where you go, just try and get the feeling of it and base it off that. But so, yeah, the Herald is you get a little, try to set some sort of theme, and then you have three individual scenes that you'll run, right, that should not be related to each other.
Okay.
Okay. Then there's like a middle section. I forget what that's called. Maybe it's just called a game. You do another game, as they say. And then you do three scenes again, which now you start, you either bring in a character that has already been established or start maybe crossing the characters over. And then by the end of the Herald, you've kind of melded and found a way to bring all three of those individual scenes into each other together.
So let me ask you this then, I follow exactly what you're saying. Is that, and I don't want to say that the word trick isn't right,
uh-huh,
but is that sort of meant to kind of like, if an audience doesn't know that format,
yeah,
and they're watching it and they're like, oh my God, they brought that one thing from that other character in.
Yeah.
And like these are the funniest, smartest comedians in the world because they found a way to pull in that other person when that was actually the plan all along.
Well, yeah, but you got to be able to do it
right.
too.
Okay.
I mean, it's cool to do that anytime in improv.
Sure.
But yeah, as that form, yeah, it's not really a form. You don't go to a show and be like, hey, we're just going to do Harold. I mean, you can.
But you
listen, there are so many like.
Have you ever recognized that was somebody doing that? Have you ever sat down for a comedy show and realized that that's what they were doing?
I mean, yeah, because it's really only done at I.O.
Oh, okay.
It's like a proprietary. They came up with it, right?
Wow.
I mean, will people do it? Yes. And I've been to like smaller shows and there are people fucking hate it. You know, there are a lot of people in the improv community in Chicago who hate the class system that you go through, like Second City. And that, you know, there's some people who are just like, I just have to take every class. And there are people who are like, I get it. I don't need to take a class. I saw a group one night do a like 4-minute Harold and it was fucking hilarious because they were just making fun of the Harold, but still at the end brought everything together and you're just like, that was fucking awesome. Like that is impressive. Yeah. So even if you know that's going to happen, being able to do that, because you sound like, oh yes, if you're doing that, you should be able to do it. But man, improv's a thing where just people don't get, they're not good at it.
Yeah. that's
a lot of people. Terrible. I understand I'm not great at it. I think I'm okay. I overthink things way too much. That's my big issue. But yeah, there are some people, man. It's just the way they're able to remember characters, bring them back in. It's a sight to see. It's impressive. That's what makes that typical train wreck art form fun to watch.
Okay, so that makes sense now, because anytime in my research that I heard him mentioned, it was like a big deal. And I'm like, who the fuck is Del Close?
Oh, yeah.
But
Bob Odenkirk gives, like, he met him in a bookstore and like credits him because he was like going to be done with doing theater shit and he was about to go off and he was just like, I just happened to meet Del Close that day.
Wow.
And Del Close is like, don't give up. Essentially.
Yeah. Words of wisdom.
Yeah.
that's very eloquent.
He did it in a more Del
right,
Close
yeah,
way.
Yeah. Yeah. A 15-minute
flourish of a scarf and.
Yeah. Right. 15-minute long form improv. Right. But
he brought it all back at the end.
Right. I don't mind that character. I think it's interesting that they like put him all the way into like a revivalist, like religious tent, you know? But I mean, I guess
he looks cool though.
He does.
He's been burned. He was set on fire accidentally by a malfunctioning flamethrower. And then he was put out by Shawnee Smith. But yeah, he kind of has that scarred face and I'm like, damn, like an evil Del Close is kind of awesome.
Yes. And he was in the original one.
Oh, was he?
Yeah.
Oh, then maybe.
So I don't know.
For real?
Yes. Yeah.
Holy
and
shit.
I don't know what part he played, but it was some kind of like, but he had an eye patch in the first one.
Okay.
And then they brought him back. So that might be like a nod to that first one. I think it's kind of funny though. We've talked about, and you've sort of joked about faith before to get like, I mean, maybe not a huge congregation, but to get people to like, just give their lives over to this like cute little squiggly thing you have in a little glass bottle. It's asking a lot.
Yeah.
But
do they even know he has that?
Well, that maybe he's maybe
all
they
it takes
just,
is a powerful word, Tim. It doesn't take much else for people to be like, yeah, you just tell me whatever.
Yeah, that and his good looks. I mean, it's enough to bring anybody in. But I think it's interesting. Like, I mean, yes.
Well, you use that to then convince, like, I have actually been through hell.
Yes,
yeah.
Right.
Listen, it's all a fucking con, all right? I'll tell you how they do it at every step of the way.
Yes. But you know what? I mean, what a setup for a non-existent sequel, But that is when you make $2 million less than what your budget was.
Yeah.
But I mean, a nice setup for that. The thing is, it's like it would make a great weapon. Like if you did have the blob and you dropped it on like some country in Europe or whatever.
Yeah.
You would just have to like get it to the point where you're like, that's enough now, blob. Like you've had your fun back in the freezer. But that's not the nature of the thing.
No.
But we do know what's cool about it. I know that you have your rules, but I like the fact that the blob is not it's not contained by any surface or texture, like water, underground, obviously above ground. Like yeah. It can go anywhere.
Yeah. I will say
and make itself into like an actual sort of projectile anus as well, which is no one saw that coming, but I mean, especially not that kid, but yeah, it can do some fun, cool shit.
Yeah. It does act in a way where I'm like, if this were a large mindless thing that just absorbs thing, why would you leave a hospital?
Yes. Right.
Seems to be the eating's good there.
Right.
People strapped to beds.
They're not even running.
No, they're yeah. just sitting there. And if nothing can hurt you, like, what's its fear? You know, like, why would it retreat and hide somewhere and be sneaky?
So let me ask
you. Just fucking roll through town, bro.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, think about Times Square at, like, New Year's Eve. Oh. Just a smorgasbord.
Yeah.
So the blob, now let's make this clear, because this is kind of fun. Is the blob bad? Is it evil?
I mean, he's like the shark in Jaws, really.
Yeah.
He didn't ask to be born.
No. Nobody asked to be blob, like ever. That's just not anyone's aspiration. No.
But no, I wouldn't say it's malicious.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I guess bad because it's a hazard to people. We kind of call those things bad.
Yeah.
It's a school shooting, but that's fine.
What if it turns out that actually, aside from the award-winning movie that we know it as, that actually The Whale was meant to be a really small-scale independent blob movie? You don't know.
We've got our sequel.
Yeah, there it is.
The blob's gotten older.
Yeah.
Has a bad relationship with its daughter.
Yeah. And he's gay. Blob, but yeah, we always knew it from that anus. But no, they actually even say
that.
As
soon as it touched that kid, I knew.
Right.
No.
Yeah. No, that's another thing that we've gotten past, thankfully. Do you remember back in the 80s, it was like if someone was gay, that meant that they were an absolute uncontrollable appetite predator for anything. And it's like, no, they like even like some ugly guy being like, I don't want some gay guy coming on to me. It's like, trust me, they won't. Right. They absolutely won't.
Yeah, they have standards as well.
Right. Yes. But no, it's a fun movie. It's a cool movie. This is what I think what I like most about this movie, aside from the acting, is what I was referencing with the fact that it still stays a little hardcore, because this would normally be a movie where this would be the point where I'd say, even if you're not into horror, like this would be a really great movie for you.
Yeah.
But it's fucking gnarly. I mean, there are some hardcore kills. Like even when the kind of rapey guy gets killed, like that's, you know, he's wrapped up in these sort of tentacle things and, you know, he's still saying her name, like, Vicky, stop doing that tentacle thing that I didn't know you could do. It's great. And you see her face like deflate.
Oh yes.
And which is so awesome. Like it's a gnarly fucking visual movie. So
yeah. Cause we have the audience know that the blob has gotten into the car while he's making the drinks. Mm-hmm. And so you're still like, oh, has the blob gotten her? Or is she still just pass out? And then her face caves in.
I'm just wondering what the blob could do to add to, like, albeit consensual, a sexual experience.
Uh-huh.
Like, if it gets into somebody and then just kind of works a little on the inside.
Uh-huh.
That could be nice.
Well, it's acidic, though.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, never mind.
I'm going to guess you probably have a large chance of a new yeast infection.
At minimum.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're going to wish you had a UTI.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. God, what I wouldn't give for a good old fashioned yeast infection. Yeah, that's a thing.
I mean, that world. Where the phrase I wouldn't fuck her with the blob's dick. Isn't that where that comes from?
I think it is. Yeah, right. Yes, just cut to like a quick, like just silent picture of just Brendan Fraser as the whale, like right now, just a quick cut. But no, I'm not making fun of that. I really am not. I haven't seen that. Have you seen The Whale?
No, I heard it wasn't very good.
Really?
Yeah. I heard he's good.
Okay.
But the movie itself is not great.
Wow. Yeah.
I mean, it's based on a play. And so they, it's like they never leave that house.
At least he plays a big part.
Yeah, he
wow. Sorry. I don't know why you started it on the whale. I apologize, but no, this one thing I will say for this movie is we've covered a lot of stuff from the 80s, mid 80s, late 80s, all the way through. This aged in a sort of timeless way. Like it really didn't age. Like nothing looks like, oh my God, the 80s time capsule that the blob is.
Right.
Like, I mean, there's Kevin Dillon's hair.
Yeah, which the hair is big, but that's about it.
Yeah. Like nobody, yeah, everything looks like pretty standard for now. So it holds up really well that way. Yeah, there's really like no outdated language or anything. It's
no high schooler like gets out of a car and their hair is spiked and they've got like colored shades on.
Right.
While like synth rock plays behind them.
Nobody has more than one watch on.
Right.
So there's that. But yeah, that's what's cool about it. And I was watching it and I'm just like, dang, like. This is the stuff that makes me feel really good when you feel like you've seen it all and experienced it all, and then you can revisit something and you're like, God dang, that was so good.
Yeah.
And then I would recommend this to anybody. I mean, Bill Dubs was just, he's revisiting a lot of the stuff as we've been rolling. I still have a message from him that I haven't read yet, but I will after we're done. But I just saw the beginning of it where he's saying, like, you guys are just on a roll with me. Like, you're like making me think of these movies that I haven't watched in a long time, and they're awesome.
Good.
So, and I hope everybody else feels that way too. No, I think I think that the blob is refreshing. And it is, it's not Jason, it's not Leatherface, it's not even like a it's not like a mystical force or a ghost or whatever. It's just like, what else is like the blob? You can't even say the fog because that's just a bunch of shitty pirates.
Right.
So like, there's nothing else really like the blob.
Yeah,
the only stuff. Thing. Oh, the stuff. Okay. Yeah. And
but that was the blob with commentary.
Yes.
If you want
your
blob commentary movie.
And ADR.
So maybe that was it. They were like, well, they already made the stuff, so let's just do the fucking blob.
Also, the only other thing is there's that really cool segment of, I think it's Creepshow 2 that's called The Lake,
where
that thing in the lake.
Yeah, it's like that oil slick.
Yeah, that's kind of cool.
Oh,
maybe we should do
a little rapey scene in that too, where the girl's sleeping and the guy starts like,
oh yeah,
undressing her, and then she dies.
Yes, right, right. No, that might be something.
Listen, we live in a decade where it was okay to undress a sleeping lady, all right?
Right.
Get over it.
He said it was hot outside. I mean, that's been established. He's a good Samaritan. But yeah, no, overall, there was nothing cringy about it. There was nothing dated about it. I enjoyed the hell out of it. And I'm so fucking, I would have never thought to cover this. I was just completely off my radar.
Yeah, I don't know why I thought of it. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I remembered liking it and I kind of wanted to revisit it.
I'm fascinated to find a horror movie. There is one, with Matt Dillon, just so that I can spend the entire show being like, and what about this scene?
Yeah.
And then what about this scene? Did you hate him in this scene?
The House of Jack Built?
Yeah.
Yeah.
God, it got a standing ovation. People throwing up and giving a standing ovation at the same time.
Where?
Can?
Yeah. Dude.
Did they just hand out standing ovations to everyone? Okay.
Like, that is lost all.
So it's like,
oh, wow, 25-minute standing ovation. I'm sure it was that good.
Yeah. So, like, if you have a 5-minute one, which to us would be amazing, right. It's like, yeah.
I guess I'm done.
Yeah, they fucking hated it. Piece of shit. But yeah,
I mean, they gave that the new fucking Indiana Jones got like 15 minutes standing ovation.
Yeah,
I didn't see it, but I know it didn't get a 15 minute standing ovation. Or didn't earn one. That's what I meant to say.
That's just good cardio right there.
After clapping for 15 minutes. Yeah.
Right, yeah. But no, I think that this movie deserved more than it got. I'm really surprised that it didn't make its budget. That really surprises me.
Yeah, because I felt like it was bigger when it came out. Like, yeah. I don't know. I guess it didn't like have some sort of cultural hit. But yeah, I was surprised that didn't make any money at all.
I'm not sure Kevin Dillon was that recognizable at that point, other than Matt. I know that I had seen Kevin Dillon in a movie where he played somebody that was 5/8 Native. that part was the fact that it was that specific, number one.
Yeah.
But oh God, and it's even got the guy who's also not Native, but at least kind of looks it, from Lost Boys.
The
one kind of long haired, dark haired.
Oh,
one.
Yeah.
He's actually Jewish, but it worked. Yeah. So, but no, I guess Kevin Dillon wasn't a huge star. Shawnee Smith was relatively unknown. Everybody is. So yeah, I mean, I guess it's a cast of unknowns at that time.
Yeah, it's more on the name recognition.
Did you watch any of Entourage?
No.
Yeah. Kevin Dillon is great in it.
Yeah.
There are a couple people that are good in it. Some of it is annoying as fuck.
Yeah, but, that's not. I mean, I've seen some Entourage, yes.
Yeah. That's really not your
enough
bag.
To be like, I don't think I really need to watch this
yeah,
show.
Yeah, I'm just going
to
continue to trust my instincts on this one. But no, I really like him as, you know, it's got to be hard growing up being, you know, a Don Swayze or a Frank Stallone. I mean, it's not an easy life. There are people that have it worse. But, you know, Kevin Dillon has probably made a pretty damn good run out of being the younger brother of somebody who's wildly famous.
Yeah.
So he's respected and liked and all that stuff. So that's good.
Yeah.
No, I love this movie. I think that this sounds
like Matt Dillon in In-N-Out as well. The Kevin Kline gay teacher movie.
Oh, I don't remember that one.
All right.
I know I worked with
a guy. He plays an actor. You can tell it's a fictional story because Matt Dillon wins an Oscar.
Oh.
And he outs him during his acceptance speech.
Really?
But he hasn't come out yet. And so it's all about Kevin Kline discovering,
I gay? Yeah, okay. I worked with a guy who stabbed Kevin Kline with a sword.
Oh.
Yeah, in real life.
On purpose?
Well, it was a stage play, and it was just some fight choreography that got out of hand, and he literally, stabbed him. It was like he was bleeding. But he's fine now.
Yeah.
And he's married to Phoebe Cates, so it's pretty okay. But
he's stabbing.
Speaking of awards, do you know that Arnold Schwarzenegger won a Golden Globe for his very first movie role?
Oh, for pumping iron?
No, that's well recognized and lauded, but he played a bodybuilder in a movie, like a TV movie, and won a fucking Golden Globe for it.
No.
Yeah, I don't even know what the name of it is, but it's like somebody else is famous in it. But it just kind of has a bit part playing a bodybuilder, fucking Golden Globe right off the bat.
Wow.
And he had a super successful bricklaying company before he even started acting.
I just saw a picture of him before he started pumping iron.
Mm-hmm.
And his face looks just like him, but he's on like a little skinny twerp body. Huge nipples, though.
Really
weird, yeah.
Maybe that was the motivation. Like, yeah, I got a fucking like garbage can lid here. I got to fucking even
increase
the shit out.
The surface area of everything else just to match.
Right. Yes. That's amazing. So like you meant before he started pumping iron, not the movie pumping iron, right. But literally pumping iron.
Yeah. Yeah. On his way into the premiere.
Yeah. You know the lingo. No, that is funny. I've seen pictures, but I mean, he started lifting weights at a young age. Like he won like Mr. Austria or whatever.
Yeah. No, he's pretty young.
Yeah.
I'm sure he's like a teenager.
Yeah. But he has always had that fate. He looks the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe we'll have to think about doing an Arnold movie sometime.
Oh, we did Predator.
Well, we did.
Yeah.
Yeah. There are others and they are good. Some of them.
Yeah. We could probably get away with Terminator.
Yeah, like, yeah, you could.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's a horror movie, stalker. Like, yeah, he's killing a lot of people.
Yeah.
But
it's like a Jason Voorhees, just one track mind, killing you.
You know who I love in the Terminator is there's that guy who plays the cop in the police station, helping Sarah when she first comes in.
Yeah.
Not the other guy that we also know with the lean body build, who we like. He was in Pumpkinhead.
Lance Hendricks.
Okay, so he's a cop in it, but then there's also another cop.
Oh, is he really?
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
There's also another cop, and like he's the one that does like the voice overs for like the it's like a some kind of murder show. But he'll be like Amityville, New York, a friendly sleepy town where the streets ran red with blood.
It sounds like awesome. Morgan Freeman.
Well, yeah, he does. He sounds a lot like him, actually. But now he's awesome. But yeah, we'll get around to that. Who knows? There's a lot of movies out there and a lot. But here's the thing, dude.
One in mind? I feel like that was posed because you were like.
Commando.
Oh, God.
Only because I'm always thinking about Commando.
Right.
Like at any given point of the day. Like I just love that movie so much.
Yeah.
And I'm.
That might be. You got to burn a birthday for that one.
I might have to. And I think I'm just more excited to in a public venue. Be able to say Ray Don Chong's name properly versus the first like 40 years of my life. Sorry about that, Dong. But but I think about that a lot, dude. It's a great point with the Terminator. I understand like it's kind of a heady argument. It's a little pretentious to say like, oh, is the Terminator a horror movie? But we're talking about a body count that surpasses probably at least 50% of the movies that we've covered, probably 75.
Yeah.
So how is that not? I mean, he's killing everybody.
Yeah.
He wants to kill them.
It's all he's programmed to do.
Yeah. Looking good doing it.
Looks great.
Where we
built a career off of it. That's probably enough.
Well, that's the thing. I was going to say this. It sounds like a cop out. It's not. To stop talking about the Blob isn't to say that like we're unprepared. It is to say that the Blob is just really, really straightforward and unproblematic. Half the time when we're ranting about something, it's about what a problem or what a fix there needed to be. This is just a movie that just gets it right.
Yeah.
Knows what it is, doesn't try to be more than that, and whatever it is really great and fun at it.
Yeah.
And funny along the way too. So
I mean, I think I can see its failure is in just the concept is not exciting. I mean, if before this movie comes out, if I say the Blob, all you've got is most people would just have the image of because there is the movie theater in the original. And that's kind of the big cultural moment is where people running out as the Blob's just like squirting out of the movie
theater. Yeah. Although there is that badass scene in this where you're like, oh, this movie kind of took a turn. But then we realize it's a fake movie.
Oh, yes.
You know, so that
yeah.
But they do a really good job. I always think that it's like it's hard enough just to make the movie that you're making. But when you're making a movie that actually features another movie within a movie right. that you have to go to the trouble to make that too. But they do a really fun bit with that. And annoying people in movie theaters that want to talk. Oh, God, that's. I love the movie theater, but that is one thing that I cannot handle is somebody talking.
Yeah.
I'll sit in the living room with a friend. You and I could sit and do commentary all day long on any movie. That's fine. But somebody like whispering and, that just pull your phone out, please. Just do that. I'd rather have that. But
that's the worst.
But no, I'm assuming that we both recommend this.
Yeah, I recommend it. I had a good time watching this. I was surprised my family joined me and everyone had a good time. And, you know, maybe that's an attribute that this movie has with how boring the concept sounds of the Blob. And then you sit down and you're like, oh, shit, there are some wicked kills in this blob movie.
Right. Yeah. No, you're right. That's a good point. It doesn't sound like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre sounds crazy.
Right.
And it is. The blob sounds like, I'll, you know, maybe tomorrow.
Right.
Yeah. You know, but no, it's, they make it really fun. And I loved it. I recommend the fuck out of it. I really, really liked it.
And does this get the Jess yes?
The yes, it does. So yeah, it's official, certified.
So if she didn't like it, what are you gonna say? Janot sounds weird.
Right. Yeah, I'll have to think about that one. Yeah.
She could come up with something too.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah. She'd be like, I don't want Jess yes. Or Jess.
Jess is pretty good. It's fun to say.
That one, yeah.
So shall I roll?
Yeah, let's roll it.
Fuck it.
Yeah, all right. Roll. We're down to the last seven movies on the list. We're going to swap out the die after this one. Let's see. What's a hit? Right. It's five. Oh, yeah. All right. No. Exciting.
Oh, no.
All right. So please join us next week as Evil Dice Tonight continues, as we dive back into the world of Stephen King with the 2017 movie Gerald's Game.
Yeah, eliciting the same.
Movie I feel like we have talked about several times. I have, at least.
There's a scene that we've talked about.
Okay, yeah. I know I've talked about the ending of it as well.
I am.
Because I thought we'd never cover it.
My only connection to Gerald's Game is my dad is a pretty voracious reader of Stephen King, always has been, loves his stuff, hated Gerald's Game, the book. Now, I don't know if he saw the movie or not, but he really didn't care for the book. I don't know if it's good, bad, or otherwise, but I'm interested to see it.
I did not read the book, but I could see that. It's, you know, it's more of an isolation tale.
I think you'd like his new one.
What's his new one? Isolation Tale.
You haven't. Oh, you kind of. Yeah, it's a COVID book.
Oh,
yeah. But
well, why would I like it?
No, I know.
What
you
does
don't,
that
I
know, mean?
I don't mean you. I'm saying. I think he is targeting the same people that you would think that should be held accountable for their views.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, very, very
about
much
willfully ignorant people.
Yes,
don't want to take responsibility for
that's literally exactly right, you just literally read the back jacket of the book. Yeah, literally, I just read about it. It's awesome. But I
still won't read it.
No, nor
Nancy
will.
She'll tell me about.
Yeah,
it.
Yeah, well, she'll hear it. Yeah. But.
I think we're getting to her. She has been actually reading things.
Oh, there we go. Yes. But she's reading it aloud so she can still hear it. But anyhow, before I get myself into more trouble, Nan, you're a good sport. Gerald's Game. I know absolutely fucking nothing about that except one scene. So we'll see if that lives up to the hype.
Yeah. And I watched it one time. I can't say I paid, you know, full attention to it. It was a background movie, but there are definite parts where you put down what you're doing,
right.
Pay attention to what's going on. So, yeah, I'm interested to kind of actually revisit it as I'm watching it.
Yes. Gerald's Game. I mean, just the title itself just elicits such excitement.
Yeah.
That'd probably
not
be
regretting it out of the way, really. Yeah.
No, I'm actually not.
No, I'm really regretting putting it on the list.
No, I'm glad that you did, because it's like, I just know fucking nothing about this movie.
Yeah.
So I'm super excited for it. Actually,
I think the ending is, I would love to talk about the ending.
Okay.
Cause it's nuts.
Yes.
All right. Check out our website, slumberpodcastmassacre.com. Shoot us an email, slumberpodcast@gmail.com. Check out our very active TikTok and LinkedIn pages. Huge thank to our patrons. You help make this show possible. We couldn't do it without you. Thank you so much. Tim, do you got anything else to say about what do we do with the blob?
Well, not the blob. I think we've covered it, but drink milk. You know, it's apparently very important, at least to somebody.
That's what tough guys do.
Yeah.
All right, bye.